Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore
up 3-0 in the series. Took game three. I feel like you've got this. You're ready for a sweep.
Yeah, we're just trying to take it one game at a time. They're a great team, and we expect the series to be competitive. And we're looking forward to the challenge. That's what I'm supposed to say, right? As opposed to, yeah, we did. Boy!
I would love for that to happen. I would really love for like Brooklyn to steal game three in Chicago for Brooke Lopez and be like, hell yeah, we won game three.
JR is our best bet, but he's actually really pretty good on it. Mike, he's been giving some actually like good interviews. JR is like, he's JR Smith on the court, and he's JR Smith when he's not in the arena and he's out partying, but he has been well trained to handle reporters.
He's very good on the mic.
Yeah,
he's a PR nightmare on Twitter, but he is very good on the mic.
Yeah, he's able to like his comments today. I wrote about the Celtics were very insightful. They were like, it was like without Rondo, they just don't really know what to do. And he wasn't like making fun of them. He was just saying like, their offense doesn't have a whole lot of direction.
Right.
Without Rondo on the court, and then I started looking at some numbers. Oh God!
It's really bad.
They have the Knicks have a 64-15 pick and roll point advantage.
Okay.
Like you could say, like, well, synergy. Like sometimes does wind up in spot ups. Like this was factoring passes, but if the synergy logger logged it incorrectly, okay, fine. If you take away even 8 points,
right,
if 8 of those possessions are wrong in either direction, it's still an incredible differential.
Right. Like, yeah, that's, I would say that's not ideal.
For the most basic set in professional basketball to only net you 15 points?
Yeah, not only the most basic set, but the one that's kind of the hardest to guard. Yeah, I would, if I were coaching, no disrespect to Doc Rivers, if I were coaching, I would try to improve that.
They just, we talked about the guards. Like, they don't have anybody that can run the offense. But we'll talk about that in a minute. You want to start with Phil?
Yeah, let's start with Phil. He apparently came out and said that, 4 teams have contacted him about a front office job?
Here's what I love. The San Francisco Chronicle writer was like, I honestly asked him because I was supposed to ask him, and I didn't really think he was going to answer the question. Like, he thought it would be like, well, some sort of Phil answer. Like, well, I'm just looking at opportunities to, be better than Rick Adelman or something, like, completely sliding to another member of the profession, as Phil is wont to do. And then, like, instead he was like, well, yeah, I've actually had conversations with 3 to 4 teams, which I thought was interesting. He said 3 to 4. It's like, well, do you not know? Is it 3 or is it 4?
Well, I mean, one of them, he was on his motorcycle. And he couldn't really hear, and he hit a dead spot in the cell service. So it was kind of a conversation.
He didn't know what they were saying, do you want a job?
Yeah. What I like about this is I feel like it's the only way Brian Shaw is going to get a head coaching job.
I'm really excited for the Bobcats idea.
You are trying to get everybody to the Bobcats.
I'm trying to. But think about it, though. Jordan hires the coach that brought him 6 titles, his most trusted guy. He hires Jackson to take over the team, right?
What happens to Rich Cho?
And then, I'm getting there. And then Jackson hires Brian Shaw, and they develop the triangle. They draft Nerlens Noel, and they run the triangle with Kemba and MKG and Nerlens Noel, and they build from there. And they start building, they do all these things, and Phil brings like a bunch of weird oriental statues into the office, and like there's like psychedelic posters, and everyone's smoking peyote out of pipes, and like Charlotte becomes this highly successful drug nest of the NBA.
Sure.
And Rich Cho gets pushed out, and Brian Colangelo gets fired, and Rich Cho goes to Toronto. And then Cho takes over that team and says, well, no, we're actually not going to pay $16 million a year for inefficient playmaking. And so he moves Rudy Gay, probably Golden State, and like brings in like and just like reworks around like Ross and keeps Amir and develops Valanciunas, and like he goes about it that way. And then Brian Colangelo goes back to Phoenix, and then everything works out well.
Except you still have Brian Colangelo running the team.
Just terrible.
Yeah. Also, problem with this: Walker, Kidd Gilchrist, and Noel running the triangle. That's a 30-win team.
But it'd be entertaining.
Would it?
Would it really? The big news, actually, I think for him is just that he said that none of them were coaching jobs. I talked to somebody this week that said that he is specifically, like, he doesn't want to coach, just doesn't want to do it. And I think what's probably going to happen, the only way I see him coaching is if somebody says, we really want you to coach. Like, we're willing to give you whatever front office power you want. You don't have to travel. You can only coach the home games. You get all the front office power that you want, but we want you on the sidelines to help with ticket sales, and we feel like it's important for you to be in the gym. So for 41 games, we'd like you to be there. And so if they do that, it'll probably take like 3 games off, so it'd be like 38 or whatever. But I can see that happening in Brooklyn. I can see that happening in a number of places. I don't see it happening with the Clippers. I think the Clippers are going to want a coach.
Yeah. The whole, like, oh, you coach just home games, like, that's such a sideshow. That would be a really bad idea. Even if you're getting...
Yeah, it's not like attention.
Even if you're getting Phil Jackson, like, that's a really bad idea for an organization.
I agree. I just think it could happen. I think Prokhorov is so desperate that he would do that.
Oh, yeah. No, I could see Prokhorov doing anything.
Yeah. That's the hope for me, is that they're like, well, you know, Billy King's going to stay as GM. Phil Jackson's been hired as president, czar, master of the multiverse.
Sure.
Chris Bosh.
Sure.
And part-time coach. And then, like, Carlissimo can coach the away games, and he can coach the home games, and, like, Carlissimo would probably do it. Carlissimo's like, am I getting paid? Yep, don't care.
Yeah, that sounds like a circus.
It does, but they're fine with that.
Yeah, because then they could sell circus t-shirts.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They'll sell jerseys for Phil as part-time coach.
Yep.
It'll be amazing. I think it'd be wonderful. And you could run the triangle there with could you run the triangle with Joe Johnson, Darren Williams, and Brooke Lopez?
Yes, that you could do. It's still not a championship, but that's very good.
Yeah. So that's the hope. Is there anywhere else that you could see? The other option for me is if the Kings get ripped away from Sacramento in a horrible decision by the NBA. Not that I have an opinion on the subject.
Right.
If they go to Seattle, I could see him taking over that gig.
Honestly, I could see him taking over that gig even if they stay in Sacramento.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't see him staying in Sacramento. I think he wants – my opinion is that Jackson will always put himself in a position where he can succeed and he never has to actually have a huge disadvantage. Like, that's why the Charlotte job won't happen, because he's at too much of a disadvantage. He will always put himself in a position where he has maximum advantage, and Sacramento doesn't have the pulling power. You can get free agents to Seattle. I think you have a harder time with Sacramento.
I think if you have a good organization, you can do it. They did it when the Maloofs weren't completely incompetent in the past. I think it's very doable.
Anywhere else you can see him?
You know, it wouldn't be... I mean, it's kind of messed up for Dale Demps, but it actually wouldn't be a bad idea with the core they're building in New Orleans. Like, I don't think he would go there, but I actually think, like, having him shape the Browse career could be a really good thing. I can see that working.
Interesting idea.
But Dale Demps is at least not fireable at this point.
Eric Gordon would probably buy in then.
Yeah, I think he'd ship Eric Gordon out of town.
No, I bet Gordon would respond to him really well. I think he just doesn't like Monty Williams. I think he'd probably respond there.
Yeah, maybe.
He really should have been. He should have been with the Knicks, shouldn't he? Like, that's what should have happened.
Or Phil Jackson?
Yeah.
Nah, it's too much moving around.
What do you mean?
I mean, like... I feel like you have to be everywhere if you're running the Knicks, or if you're like, I just feel like that there's so many obligations with a high profile like that.
Yeah.
And he just, like, he can't physically do all that stuff. I mean, maybe it would have been fine. Maybe they could have got him like a hover round or something. Do they make hover rounds that big for guys like who are 6'10"?
I think you could have it custom made. I'm sure someone would make it.
It would just be a motorcycle, right?
What if you got, like, an actual hover device?
That would be interesting.
Like, Professor X and the X-Men had a hovering wheelchair.
I guarantee if he got that, next person to have one, run our test. Guaranteed.
So we had games last night.
Yes, we did. A couple good ones.
couple good ones. It was the series are getting better. Everyone really complained after the first weekend. You and I really didn't. We were like, no, it's fine. Like, the games were competitive for a while, and then the better teams won, and that's what happens. Like, we weren't like upset about it.
Yeah, no, I liked it, and I thought that I thought the Indiana game was really fun, even though the final score doesn't show that. But I thought it was really fun. The Houston OKC game was fantastic.
I don't understand the Indiana Atlanta series because it's pretty much the opposite of what we expected.
How so?
Atlanta has a, like, if you told me, oh, Atlanta's really going to be, you know, they're going to be bad comparatively to the Pacers in offensive rating, I would be like, oh, God, they've got like a 98 offensive rating after two games, I'd expect. They're a 102. They've got the second highest effective field goal percentage. Like, this is an offensive series. I don't get that. Well, how is that possible? How is this an offensive series?
Yeah, I have been a little disappointed in how the Pacers have defended the three, which is the reason they're effective field goal percentage is so high. Like, I think they're shooting about 40% from three in the first two games, which the Pacers were the best at defending the three this year. So that's kind of surprising. I think part of it is the Pacers. I mean, this is going to completely slight the Hawks as a team, and I don't fully mean to do that, only partially. But I think a lot of it is the Pacers trying to figure out how seriously they have to take this matchup.
What's crazy is that like Kyle Korver is 3-9. Like, this could be a lot worse. He's missing open looks.
Oh yeah, he's missing shots he should absolutely knock down.
It really is kind of surprising.
You know what? You know who was not terrible last night?
Who?
Josh Smith. He got into foul trouble, but I was pretty happy with his play. I thought he was pretty good.
See, I looked up and it was like he took a three. He got in foul trouble. I looked up. He took another three, and I was like, "Oh my god!"
Yeah, but he only took two on the night.
I just happened. See, that's what happens. This is why when people talk about like, "Well, I watch the games," like, this is why you can't trust it. Because if you get distracted by something and you come back and then you see that, like, that's my perception. It's just Josh Smith sucked last night.
Yeah. Another thing, I mean, there were really good stretches in which Jeff Teague was awesome. But if you just looked at his numbers for last night, 16 points on 16 shots, like, he didn't really do anything. But I thought he played a very controlled and very nice game.
Yeah, he's been great in the series. I love Jeff Teague. I'm looking forward to him. I think Atlanta's going to pay him, but if he doesn't, man, the team's going to get a really good point guard with a lot of upside if they don't pay him.
Yeah, I still don't know how much you need Jeff Teague.
No, you know, he's not a superstar, man, but he's just like, I just like him as a good player.
But that's why it worries me, because you talk in terms of like, oh, he's going to get paid, or if this team doesn't want to pay him, someone will. And it's like, how much money do you really want to invest in Jeff Teague? Like, he's a good point guard, but is he a guy that's going to be $9-10 million a year? Like, that's kind of a scary thought to me.
You think $9 million is too much for Teague?
Yeah, I think for players that aren't absolute impact all-stars, like, you approach eight figures, that's kind of dangerous. I think we've seen that throughout, especially now with the way the CBA is and the way the cap is. I think now more than ever, you have to avoid those eight-figure contracts where it's like, yeah, that guy would be fun to have. Let's get him.
See, I'm turning around on that, though, because so many of these guys are coming off the rookie deals, and then, like, that next 4 years are turning into really good players. I think that there's an opportunity there for him to be very good. I think he's got a whole lot of growth potential.
Sure, but I also think that it's such a saturated position that...
That's an interesting question, though, with the fact that it's so saturated. Is it everybody's got one, so you know you can get one, so you don't have to pay as much? Or is it everybody else has one, so you better get a good point guard?
I think it's so easy to get a good point guard now that you don't have to go out and pay for one.
Would you rather have Kyle Lowry or Jeff Teague?
Kyle Lowry.
Okay.
It's pretty close, though. I will say that.
It's pretty close, considering Kyle's attitude. Like, if Kyle didn't have his attitude, I think it'd probably be Kyle.
Yeah. I think you have to be pretty careful about the type of players you put him around and the coach that you have for him. But I think it's a workable situation.
The stories out of Toronto are not good. But yeah, I mean, the Pacers' offense has also been really impressive. Like, they tend to die, and I keep waiting for them to have – not necessarily – I didn't think they'd have it at home. 3-4 will be interesting to see if they have one of those games where the offense just, like, dies.
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of what I'm waiting to see is I don't feel like the Pacers have taken the Hawks that seriously so far, and it's been more of an open game. Like, I want to see them kind of with their backs against the wall a little bit and have to lock down and play that brand of basketball we saw all season long. Because I don't think we've seen even a glimpse of that yet.
Paul George, Roy Hibbert, George Hill. Holy crap.
George Hill is having – I mean, Paul George is getting all the pub right now. George Hill's having himself a series.
He is managing this game so well right now.
He really is.
All of his decision-making is just top-notch.
He really is. Here's a question I have for you. Would you rather have George Hill or Brandon Jennings?
What?
George Hill or Brandon Jennings?
I would rather have George Hill 100 times over.
But I don't think that's something that a lot of people would pick.
You know what? If they'd rather have Brandon Jennings, I'm going to bet they would bet for Ibaka for defensive player of the year.
Are we still on that?
Because of his shooting. pick Serge Ibaka for defensive player of the year because of his shooting.
That was something I missed, something you told me about later. Something I'm still not very sure about how that makes sense.
Big question mark. No, I would rather have Hill, not just for his offense and his decision making and not doing the things that Brandon Jennings does, but Hill, I feel like, is very — I have never seen Hill operate outside the context of the offense. There's things he can't do, but he understands them.
Yeah.
And that's like an interesting kind of thing in the league, because there are guys that try and do things that they can't do, and sometimes they surprise themselves and everybody else because they just do them. I feel like James Harden's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
Where it's like, well, he can't do this, and then he just started doing them. And then, like, with George Hill, though, he plays so much within himself, and I love those guys that play within themselves.
Yeah, and George Hill is one of the most impressive point guards in the league when it comes to scoring or taking shots out of a pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
He's so good at picking his spot and knowing when he should take a shot, where he should take the shot from. Like, he reads the pick and roll, not great as a point guard, but great as a scorer.
I also like that, like, David West played 20 minutes last night, did not have a good game, and he's not complaining at all. Like, David just wants to win. Wants to win.
Yep. And that, oh my God, the dunk by Hibbert and the dunk by Gerald Green.
Which one was better? It's a great question. I think it's a great question. Which one was better?
It's probably Green, but I really like the Roy Hibbert one.
The Hibbert extension is what makes it look so cool. I always go for — versus guy trying to take a charge, I will always take. Guy jumps in the air trying to block you, gonna foul you. I will take that one every time, because it's like the degree of difficulty with Josh Smith coming up to meet you at the rim is so high.
Yeah.
And the camera angles they got on it, and they were great photos of it. Oh, I love Green's. I love Hibbert's too, but they were really good.
And
Gerald Green with 15 points.
Yeah, he had a great game. And the thing about Green's dunk is it was such like a coiled snake attack, because it wasn't a big windup or anything. It was just a quick, like, jab at the rim. Like, it was a really cool dunking motion in that sense of, like, it wasn't this big windup. It was, oh, the shot blocker's here. I better get this ball around his hand real quick.
Jeff Pendergraf is, like, a player.
He has been pretty good for, like, the last, like, week that they've used him, including the playoffs.
The Hawks — here's the thing that frustrates me, because, I mean, I know that you are a long-standing skeptic of the Hawks. This would be a really compelling series if they had Lou and Zaza.
Yes, absolutely.
It would be such a compelling series.
Absolutely.
That's exactly what they're missing, because the Hawks are getting nothing off the bench, and they've got no help inside.
And Devin Harris was even, like, decent last night, and it's still — the entire time I'm watching him, I'm thinking, this should be Lou Williams. Like, this should be Lou Williams, and the other key is Pachulia's, because instead you've got Johan Petro for 10, 15 minutes, and with Pachulia, his size against Hibbert would be very interesting. He's a very solid defender. He's a very big guy that other big guys have a problem banging with.
So now we've talked, like, for 15 minutes on the series no one gives a damn about.
Yes.
How about Houston?
Hey, that was a scrappy game.
We were talking about this with, with Royce Young, who's got articles up from Oklahoma City last night. He was there. We talked about when he was like, okay, what should I write on? And his opinion was that the Rockets let an opportunity to steal one slip. And you and I were kind of on the side. I thought that it was more like, to me, it was, hey, Houston is going back to Houston with the thought, look, we are in this. We can compete.
Yeah. Which is, I think for a team that young, especially after the first game they had, it's huge. Houston's not going to win the series, and Houston can't win the series. But the fact that they believe, like, I think after game one, it would be very easy to doubt that you are a playoff team. Like, even though you made it, I think it's very easy to doubt that you should be there. And to come back in game two and basically get down to the final possession of trying to execute to stay in the game and give yourself a chance to win is huge. To do that on the road as a team that is so young, like, that's just really big. Are they going to win a game in Houston? Probably not. I hope they can steal at least one, not just to make my prediction happy, but to just do that for their own growth as a team. But that's a tough place to play. That's a tough place to almost steal a game from. And they didn't do it, so who cares? But I think that's big for their growth.
Oklahoma.
Oh, City Thunder. Hey. God, I love that thing.
It's gone viral, this video that we found. We posted on CBS. We may post a new one, I don't know. There's this chant from a shirtless man that is now being spread. I'm terrified. This is like a thing that's becoming... I'm worried there's like some sort of subliminal messaging in the thing that makes people like turn into some sort of like mindless zombie army.
I have been depositing money into a bank account I don't know about ever since I saw that video.
You too?
Yeah.
I was impressed. They have to know a team like that that's that young, you have to not know better. This is what you want from the Rockets. It's just for them to be competitive and show some things and build some momentum going into next year. That's like all you're really looking for. The worst thing that you can be, here's what's funny. I think that the Bucks, despite the vast differential, the Heat are 20 points better per 100 possessions so far in the first two games, which is a lot. I still feel like the Bucks are in a better position than the Jazz were versus the Spurs last year.
The Jazz
were a young team with some veterans who should compete and completely could not in any way.
That's the example that just popped into my head as I was thinking, this is good for Houston because they're at least competitive in one of the games. And I thought, who's the last young 8 seed to really just get destroyed? I was like, oh, right, last year. Last year, the Jazz just got destroyed and looked like they didn't belong in the playoffs. And I don't think that carried over into this year. There were a lot of factors heading into this year of why they didn't make the playoffs. But I just think that can be a little discouraging for young players. Like, hey, you don't belong in the playoffs.
Right. Like Chandler Parsons and all those guys know, like, we can do this. Like, we can make a run at them.
Yeah. Two guys I love the effort from. Obviously, Patrick Beverley had a great game.
Yeah.
Was as good as you could have hoped for him to be, and then some. And I like what I saw from Greg Smith. He didn't have a great start to the series, and he wasn't great last night, but he seemed a lot calmer in the things he tried to do. He did get a stupid technical for dunking on Serge Ibaka, and then like it was like a weird, like, he was like kind of half flexing and like staring at him, and then just walked away and got a tech. You can't really do that, so I don't blame the officials for that, but it was a funny moment of a guy who I don't find to be that emotional, and it looked like he was trying to figure out how to be emotional.
He only went 9 deep, and Brooks only played 3:44. Lynn had an injury, which is why Delfino got so many minutes. Should he not be looking at some of these other options?
Like?
I think he gave Terrence Jones a run on Ibaka.
Ugh.
Just to see what happens.
Oh, I think that's a bad idea.
Why?
Because I don't think Terrence Jones can hang with him.
They're going to get like in the post, you mean?
On the post, on the boards, I don't think he can. I don't think he can outthink Ibaka when he's got the ball, and I don't think he can outwork Ibaka. Like I think that he's someone who, if you had more of a more of a traditional stretch four out there, I would play him against him. But Ibaka's enough of a banger, but he's still quick that I think that, I don't know, I just think Terrence Jones would really get eaten alive in that situation.
I'm not looking for him to play even 10 minutes. I'm looking for a 5-minute stretch to see if he can contribute to trying. I just think that you have to try some different things. I guess last night it was that they were successful, so they wanted to stick with it, and I can appreciate that. Playing Delfino at the four, was, and like apparently that's McHale's new strategy is, well, we tried being and traditional in some form, and that didn't work.
Yeah.
So now we're just going to play guards.
Yeah, and it's smart, and I think that that's it's easier to play Delfino or Parsons at the four because you are committing to a very specific style that I don't think Jones necessarily fits into. Like he's not going to stretch the defense that much, at least not yet.
I feel like I was with you. I felt like Greg Smith had a good game, and Omer Asik did not have a great game. And Asik was +12, and Smith was -15. So I mean, we can just chalk it up to that's how that metric works, and sometimes it's completely useless. But I did think that was interesting.
Yeah, for sure. And then Harden just, God, the way he attacked, especially in the second half, like he just got to the free throw line so much.
Last game, I wrote this really simply last night. The Spurs are better. They are good. The Lakers are not.
Yep.
And this is the Lakers, so we have to dissect it, break it down. But there's just not a lot to talk about because the Spurs are really good. They're very focused. They are playing like 2007, not 2011. They are playing a really tough style to match up against for anybody. They're getting a lot from Manu. Kawhi Leonard.
Ooh, wow. Boy.
Wow.
He's a player.
And it's crazy because I said that last night, and a very notable writer DM'd me and said, you know, I would say that, but it's got to be Manu because of how he's taken over. And I was like, Manu's not doing what Kawhi is on defense.
No.
Like, Kawhi is everywhere. He's one of those that like you have to watch a lot of basketball to appreciate. God, he is fun to watch. He's just making so many great things happen.
And he, you know, I wrote this about how he's kind of in that Sean Marion role of whatever you need from him that night, he kind of just adapts to naturally. And it's not a guy that you run plays for necessarily, but he just finds the holes in the defense. Like he's so spatially aware when he doesn't have the ball, that it's really, and a lot of that's the system, and he buys into the system, and he's learned it, and Pop trusts him, so it's easy for him to fit into that role. But he just knows where to be. It's like a very cliche. Oh, he has a knack for the ball, but he does.
There's nothing. I don't think the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers could get one of those games where their perimeter guys hit some shots, but it's happened a few times this season. I've seen. And take game four. I really think the Spurs. This looks to me exactly like a gentleman's sweep. This looks
really
in every
does.
Way like a gentleman's sweep.
Really does. It was funny as they're like, "Hey, Jordan Hill might be back," and then he played. I don't know, 6 minutes. And it's like, "Oh, cool. Can he play on the perimeter?" Because that's what they need. They don't need more post. They have plenty of post players.
I'm a little annoyed because look, this team had a horrible run of injuries, and I really do feel bad for them. I genuinely feel bad for them because I hate for fans to have to go through that. It sucks for anybody.
Yep.
You know that as a Wolves fan this year, like it's horrible. It's a bummer because you don't ever get to see was your team as good as you thought it was going to be. You've got no real way of knowing.
It's so deflating. That's the word I would use to describe it.
But this team, outside of their injuries, is bad. Outside of their injuries, it's a bad team.
Well,
they're slow.
Well,
they're effective.
No, you can't say they're a bad team.
On a playoff comparative scale.
Okay.
I don't mean that they're the Bobcats.
Okay.
They're not horrible. They're not a pathetic team. They're just. Maybe you're right. They're not a bad team.
I mean, I feel like
they're just definitively not a good one.
Yeah, I feel like if Kobe was out there, hadn't torn his Achilles, and they had this matchup, I feel like this would be a very close series. I still think the Spurs win it, but I think it would be close. And then I don't know how bad they are.
I don't know. I look at it, and I don't like their spacing. I don't like the way that the ball moves. I don't like...
Well, the spacing's bad because they don't have an elite wing scorer that they used to have a week ago, 2 weeks ago.
It wasn't great when he was around, though.
It was pretty good. It was good enough. And they also weren't running. They also weren't pounding into the post as much as they are right now.
But that's the secret to success, everyone says.
Well, that's not true at all.
anyway, so San Antonio will win, and we'll get the Lakers. I'll be writing a lot about the Lakers season. I'm going to do an update to our digital history that we did of them earlier, and looking at where they go from here. I mean, I'm of the opinion, as much as I just said, that they are not good. Like, all you can really do is get some better shooters, try again next year. Hope everyone is healthy next year. See
well, there are two. There are two ways they can go. They can, I mean, you assume that Dwight is going to be really good next year. At least I do. Like, he's going to be healthy, most likely, and a healthy Dwight is a lot better than what we've seen. Like, he's moving better, I agree with all that, he looks better, but he is not even close to as good as he has been in the past. And I think it's safe to assume that with the way you've seen him get healthier throughout the season and move better, that he's going to fully recover from the back surgery. Now, that's an assumption, but I think it's a pretty decently educated guess. And so, if you decide to pair him with Pau Gasol still, I think it can work in terms of them being a good team. You have to surround them with shooters. If you don't, if you ship out Pau Gasol, you don't have to get an all-star in return. If you get two or maybe even three quality role players in return, well, now you've got much-needed depth, and you still try to add shooters, and this is a much better overall team. I think regardless, they just need shooting to really space the floor. A healthy Steve Nash would also help. He looks brutal.
Doesn't he?
Oh, my God.
Nash is one of my favorite players to watch of all time. He is top five for me. And watching the shell of a person is just wretched.
It's really bad. It you know, reminded me of kind of the feelings I got seeing Joakim Noah the other night. Only with Noah, you know it's going to eventually go away. With Nash, you're like, oh, this might be him from now on.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, Ebanks comes off the books. Morris comes off the books. Sacre comes off the books for $988,000. I'm looking at salary figures on ShamSports.com, which is a great site you should check out. Meeks is a team option at $1.5 million. Oh, that clears a little bit of room. It doesn't really matter about the room because they can't.
Right. I mean, at this point, you're hoping for guys to come for the minimum because they. Yeah. Probably won't have their exceptions, right? They don't have any, or maybe they have one mini mid-level.
Is there a Ray Allen kind of guy that's going to be available?
That's a good question. I haven't looked.
I have to look at the veteran options for them. But, you know, hey, look, maybe they take games 2 and 3, and then it's a totally different series, or 3 and 4, and it's a totally different series, and it's going to be long, and the Lakers figure out something. Maybe we're jumping the gun on this. Yeah. The Spurs just look definitively better in every aspect, and I don't think anybody's got a shot against them.
Maybe they do take three and four.
No shot against them.
Maybe they do take 3 and 4. Maybe I find a suitcase full of $1 million. Who knows? Things can happen.
Who knows? Maybe I get a sex change operation. We can't answer. Everyone's kind of excited for the game tonight. This is we're entering pivotal game 3 territory.
Yes. I have really enjoyed the playoffs so far, but until you get to the other destination, it's kind of hard to know what you're looking at, right?
Yeah.
And we'll get much more clarity tonight.
I mean, I would very much appreciate it, the Heat, because the Heat have this tendency in the past years, they'll win the first two, and then they'll kind of screw around on the road, and it's road, so it's hard, and they kind of, I would really like them for them to just slam the door, just bam, nope. Uh-uh.
Yeah, just end it so you can finish it up Saturday and get out of there.
Yeah, like, this is not happening. Or Sunday, whenever they play. I'm okay with them dropping game 5 and a gentleman's sweep. I'm fine. Or game 4 and a gentleman's sweep, that's fine. But don't open this up to, can Milwaukee make this a series? I don't want to write that. Like,
hey, Brandon Jennings will write it for you.
He will. Sticking with 6 games.
What I like is he hasn't offered up the possibility that this could go 7 and they could steal a game 7. It's like, no, this is 6 games. We're winning in Milwaukee.
They're going to lose game 3, and he's still going to be like, we're winning in 6.
Yeah, he's going to be like, I got a good feeling about next game's counting for 2.
The two big ones. Well, first off, the Bucks are 7.5-point dogs. I like the Heat to cover.
Yeah, well, If the Bucks are going to win one, it's tonight. Yeah, the Heat will cover.
Okay. The Bulls are 3.5-point favorites versus the Nets at home. It was 4, and it's down to 3.5.
That's because of the news that Derrick Rose will not play.
I'm assuming.
Moved it a half point.
Half point.
Yeah.
I'm so sad. I wrote about this. I wanted the, like, you know, because I thought it was illegal for you to not declare your starters. That's what I was under the impression. And then Mark Jackson wrote the sheet, said that Harrison Barnes was starting. And then, woo, Jerry Jack started.
Yeah.
So I was hopeful that they would just say that Rose is going to be active. He will not play. And then, right, like, during intros, they just, like, from Chicago! And, like, the place just goes berserk, and we're all flipping out on Twitter, and it's, like, this amazing moment in sports.
It would be great. Incredible. It would be great if they just hit the bench with a spotlight, and there's nobody there. They're, like, you know, from Chicago. And people are like, what the hell, Derrick Rose is here? And then Benny the Bull walks through and takes off the head, and it's Rose in the costume.
Let's make this more ridiculous. And then he descends from the ceiling. Is this what you want for your guy with an ACL to drop from the sky?
And during the first quarter, he's doing a crossover. He's got the T-shirt cannon in one hand. He's shooting it at different Nets players. Brook Lopez is like, ooh, free T-shirt.
That's a pretty good Brook Lopez impression, actually.
Nobody does a better one than Trey Kirby, though.
That's true. I took the Bulls in the picks, but now I'm rethinking it. I'm leaning toward the Nets.
I wrote about this, just posted right before we started recording, that about the way the Bulls took Deron Williams out of game 2. And it's basically they just stopped letting him get into the paint. He had 8 field goal attempts inside the restricted area in game 1 and was fantastic throughout the entire game. Even though his jumper wasn't great, it was like 2 of 7. Well, that's actually pretty bad. But he lived in the paint. He was like 7 of 8 in the restricted area. And then in game 2, he only had 2 attempts in the restricted area. And only one of them was a layup. The other one was a really weird, like, sideways fadeaway runner it was the only shot he made. And it was just on the restricted area. But they really just stopped letting him into the paint.
Can they do that again?
They can. I mean, that's what they do, right? They don't let you get inside. It's a matter of how creative does PJ Carlissimo get. I think you can combat it with running him more off the ball and letting Joe Johnson handle. And I think you can run him like around curl screens and stuff to get him going towards the basket as he catches the ball. And I think that's very doable. But that's also something Chicago can adjust to. So it's really going to be how much does he want to get into the paint.
We're due for a Luol Deng game, I think.
It's about time.
Something that's gonna play, because we talked about Noah so much. Joe Johnson's also got plantar fasciitis.
Yeah.
And again, this is a guy that could be sitting out, and he's out there.
Yeah.
He's overpaid, whatever. He's played really well for them this year overall, and he could be a big factor. But he's also battling through injury, so I just wanted to mention that because I forget about it.
Yes. Good point. What do you think is going to happen tonight?
I don't know. You know, they won game 2 with Brook Lopez still having a monster game. That's the thing, is Brook Lopez has been the guy that's like, I'm here.
Yeah, he's their rock.
Like, where are you guys at? Like, I'm here. I'm trying. What? Come on. And it's, you know, after game 1, we all overreacted. And it was like, oh, well, man, like, the Bulls have, like, Nate Robinson. And then I was like, in the game 2, I was like, man, the Nets have Andre Blatch and Reggie Evans.
Yeah.
Like, this is rough, you know? And their guards, CJ's, I like him overall.
I think he's been good in the first 2 games.
Yeah, and he has been, but it's also, like, you need, like, somebody to be, like, whoa, like, that guy. And they don't have and they don't really have shooters either.
Do they with not a shooter, but a whoa, that guy, do they with Marshawn Brooks? Can he be that? Okay.
Marshawn's been bad this year. His regression's been a problem.
Well, he's been bad, but I think there's been a big lack of trust from the get-go with him.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that they ruined his confidence, and like the association talked about it, and Brooklyn Games kind of written about it. But he's been, for a guy that everyone really jumped on last year, when I was like, "Yeah, shot selection's not great," He's been really quiet this year, and I actually have liked some of his decision-making this year. He's just not getting any trust or minutes, and man, if you're a scorer and you don't have confidence because your team is going to kill them, yeah. That's hard.
Oh, it's really hard.
So I don't know where they turn to versus Nate Robinson. Confidence is not an issue.
Oh, my God. They don't even trust him, and he has confidence.
They're just like, well, I guess I'll put him out in the – okay, he scored 20 points. All right.
It's more of a, Nate, you know we don't want to play you right now, but we have to. So just try –
I don't like you, and you don't like
me. Yeah, I don't like you. You don't like me. So just do me a favor and try to – he's like, oh, got to get in there, coach. And he just doesn't even let him finish the sentence.
So, I mean, I think it's going to come down to the Bulls' offense.
Yep.
Their defense is, there's no way Darren has another game like that. But is he going to be back to being awesome? It's just hard to predict.
That was my concern with them going in. Like, I still picked the Nets to win in seven. I still feel pretty strong about that. But, you know, people were telling me, like, oh, no, he's been great since the All-Star break. I was like, well, yeah, but eventually cortisone wears off. And whether it's cortisone or whether it's the Bulls' defense just not letting him in the lane – it's something. Like, you can't count on him for whatever reason. And I, you know, he can get that back pretty easily because he's that talented. But you just don't know.
If Joe shows that he can play well, they need to get him in the post.
Oh, he's so good in the post.
And they need to do it. They need to overload the weak side.
Oh, get a switch with him and Heinrich or when Bellinelli's in the game, put him in. And get him in the post. Like, there's so much you can do. I don't like him in the post against Jimmy Butler,
right?
Or Luol Deng, but I think you can get mismatches and just dominate with him on the block.
The Bulls have a lot of guys that I'm like, oh, he could have a big game. And with the Nets, I'm kind of like, well, their stars have big games like they usually do.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting kind of cross section, and it makes you think, like, God, man, what if this team did have Rose?
it'd be fun.
that would be enjoyable.
That would be very enjoyable.
And then
you start drinking.
And then the tears start flowing.
Tears are flowing.
My whiskey and Pepto.
Yep. Clippers Grizzlies in Memphis at the Grindhouse, down 0-2.
I'm writing up this afternoon a thing about how Game 3 in Memphis could legitimately be the start, could be the end of this Grizzlies team.
Really? You don't think the front office trusts them as constructed?
I think that if they lose game three, I think immediately the question is going to be, what's our going rate for Randolph? And then it's going to be, if we're going in this direction, do we really need Tony?
Right.
And then it becomes, well, the bench is horrible, so they're all movable anyway. And what you're really looking at then is, it's Marc Gasol and Mike Conley, and they're going to want to keep those two. But I said this on Twitter, if they'll go into it thinking, I'm definitely, you know, Mike Conley and Marc Gasol are our foundation. That's who Para had lunch with. That's like the big thing I hear people talk about, that he had a lunch meeting with just those two.
Yeah.
And so the indication is, like, that's the future. But if you get an overwhelming offer based off of your rebuilding objectives for Mike Conley and you've already decided to move in that direction, it will be hard to turn down. If you get a 2014 lottery pick and a quality rotation player,
yeah,
that gets hard.
Yeah, I kind of like this team. I mean, they need another player. They're a player away.
That's the other problem is, like, they blow this team up, the city's going to turn on them.
Oh, for sure.
They love it. This is the team that finally made that city fall in love with professional basketball, which Powell could never make happen. Powell could never do it. The team was really pretty good. The numbers aren't good when you look at it in terms of their efficiency differential. It kind of shows, like, why everyone was so on them. But, you know, Battier and Gasol, and you had some real talent there, but this is the team that really made Memphis give a damn.
Yeah.
And they'll really turn if they go ahead and they blow up. Now, I'm jumping ahead because I am a super skeptic about Memphis, and this Grizzlies matchup makes me want to just kick myself in the nuts. It's horrible.
Which is hard to do.
It's difficult.
A self-punch is very easy, but to pull off you got to do a little bit of yoga. You've got to be very flexible in the knee joint.
I just think about Chris Paul, and then, like, the essence of Chris Paul kicks me in the nuts, so it's actually not that hard.
That's the thing. That's just, oh, my God, he's so good. Because you think about, oh, they've got this matchup, and there's this matchup, and if they play this way, and they play this way, and then you're like, all right, then they're pretty even, and then the Clippers still have Chris Paul.
And everyone's really high on the Clippers right now, and I think that a lot of it's warranted. I don't want to overreact to one series because I've seen this happen before where a team was – they could be contenders, and then they have a really strong first round, and it's, look out, this team is on the rise, and then the next round it's like, oh, no.
Yeah, well, the next round they face the Oklahoma City Thunder, and as good as they look right now, as good as the Clippers look right now, and as much as you want to believe they're contenders – that's a huge that's the biggest roadblock they could possibly face. If they hadn't screwed up and they had gotten the 3 seed and moved on and they were facing the Spurs next round, you would think, all right, this team gets past the Spurs and they've got momentum. They're in the Western Conference Finals. You know, they've got enough confidence at this point. But dispatching a very good Grizzlies team while you have home court advantage is not going to carry you that much into the next round to where you're going to OKC for hopefully 4 out of 7 games.
And then I will say, I looked at this morning, by the way, the Clippers through two games of the playoffs, sample size, blah, blah, blah. They have the best half-court offense in terms of points per possession via Synergy.
Yeah.
And people have a lot of issues with Synergy data. Kind of hard to not value when you just separate things into transition versus half-court. Like, yeah. They are executing in the half-court. They have the best half-court offense so far in the playoffs.
Yep.
So, it's not like they're facing a crappy defense either.
Nope, they're facing the second-best defense in the league.
Yeah. Grizzlies are favored by 4.5.
Ooh.
It opened at 3.5.
Ooh. I like the Clippers to cover. I don't know who wins, but I like the Clippers to cover.
Everything, like, shots fall more at home. You get into more of what you want to do at home. You're more comfortable at home. They just don't have shooters. They just don't have anybody that can make a field goal.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you're hoping Bayless gets hot from outside or Conley or...
You're hoping Conley has a game like Game 2, and it's mostly you're hoping Zach feels better and gets the crowd behind him, and he really steps up.
Yeah, maybe you can get Pondexter or Tayshaun Prince a couple of corner threes each to go down.
He won't try Austin Day or Tony Roden, and he really needs to. And I know everyone, like Grizzlies fans, hate Austin Day, which is fine. But look, if you get anybody with any shooting potential whatsoever, you have to throw them out there to try and get them hot. Just do.
Yeah.
Like, you have to see if, because if Quincy Pondexter's not going to hit him.
He shouldn't be out there.
But he's got to hit those.
Yeah, like, he's a nice role player, but if he's not hitting corner threes, he shouldn't be on the court.
Someone's got to make those jump shots. Somebody has to make those jump shots.
God, just play. He's not going to make jump shots, but just play Tony Roten for 3 minutes in the second quarter. So I can know if I'm a complete idiot or if I have some kind of idea of what should happen here. I just want to see it. I just want to see it. And if I'm wrong, then I'm fine with that. But I just want to see it because I have a feeling.
Give me the Roten.
Just give me the Roten. Unleash the Roten.
Over-under is 179.5.
That's not a lot of points.
Not too much, no.
That's got to go over.
Yeah, I would think so. I don't think Memphis can lock him down like that. And I don't think the Clippers defense will be as good on the road.
Yeah.
Man. I think this is a big one for Memphis in a lot of ways. The blow-up's inevitable. I think it happens no matter what.
Probably,
but
yeah.
If you go out in the first round in a 4-1, it wouldn't necessarily be a gentleman's sweep, but a 4-1, we dominated you.
Yeah.
Kind of. We dominated this tough matchup. I really think that Jason Levine and Hollinger and Lash, who no one talks about. Stu Lash got hired at the same time.
Yeah, poor Stu Lash. Stu Lash is like a very important figure around the league. Like
and he got hired, and like everyone just mentions Hollinger because they've read his articles. And
right.
I love John. John's one of the coolest guys I've ever met. But
yeah.
There's a whole bunch of people. I call it. There's a cadre that's involved in the conversation. So. Because Para doesn't believe this team's a title contender, and I don't think Hollinger believes that this team's a title contender, and I don't know what Lash is thinking is, but if they don't believe it's a title contender, and that's the objective,
yep.
Here's my concern, though. If you're worried about money, and you don't think this team is a title contender, I'm really concerned, because I don't know how you're going to get to be a title contender without spending money.
Well, I don't think it's a matter... I still don't think it was a matter of money. I think it was a matter of cap flexibility. I really think that because of the new CBA, that was the issue, is... You can't approach.
He's got got like 30 minority partners, man. Like,
but it's about leaving your options open for exceptions and sign in trades and all that. I think that's what it is. I don't think it's the I don't think it's paying the money. I think it's the restrictions that being a repeat luxury tax payer puts on your team and on the moves you can make. I don't think anybody wants to go into a situation, take over running a team, and then be like, oh, in 2 years we might not be able to do this type of transaction. I really think that's what it is.
I don't know. There's mixed signals. We'll have to see how it works out. But big games tonight should be fun. So we both like Miami to cover. I'll take the Nets after I picked otherwise. So I'm going to hedge my bets and say both.
I'll go the Bulls just so one of us is right.
Okay. And then
I'm going I don't like going against Chris Paul. It makes me sad.
Clippers win.
Look at you in the reverse jinx.
Clippers win. Matt Barnes hits a corner three for the win, and I put my head on a burning hot oven. Not even like the oven, on the actual like the stove part.
Yeah, like on the burner.
Yeah, on the burner.
Okay, before we go, Adrian Wojnarowski is reporting that the Nets are nearing a multi-year agreement with Billy King. Of course they are.
Of course they are.
I love this. I really love this. He's not a bad GM. He's just nobody I would ever want running my team. And I've got David Kahn running my team.
Well, I mean, look, if you spent $85 million on a four seed that's struggling versus the Bulls without Rose, what more can you ask for?
That's true. Hey, sell a t-shirt. We lost to a Roseless Bulls team.
I got Darren Williams to re-sign because he makes $20 million more this way after the Mavericks also got rid of Tyson Chandler.
Yeah. Sell that on a t-shirt.
I love it, man. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Matt.